Okay, this evening we're going to pick up. We're going to be discussing Jacob finally leaving his service of Laban and doing what God has commanded him to do and going back to the land of Canaan.
All right, so the first two verses,
chapter 31, who remembers what did the sons of Laban say about Jacob? Did they like Jacob? Did they think favorably of Jacob? Right, so yeah, the sons accuse Jacob of theft. Everything that he's got is actually Laban's. Okay, verse 2, another important one. Hey, deal with people like you by looking at their facial expressions. So we may be talking about that here. Maybe Jacob could tell a difference. And just as the way he looked, that's the way the scriptures describe it. Maybe it's just the way he acted toward him. But there was something that changed with the way that Laban looked upon Jacob or acted around him. And think back to verse 2, or we're in verse 2, but think back to Genesis chapter 29 when Jacob first comes to the land of Laban. What does Laban do when Jacob first meets him? He runs to him, right? He's so happy to see him. And just the chapter before this, Laban wants Jacob to stay. He says, no, wait, don't leave. What do you want for your wages? He wants to do everything he can to keep Jacob there. But at this point, he's soured on Jacob because he sees the wealth that Jacob is acquiring when it comes to livestock. Okay, in verse 3, God gives Jacob the command to go back to the land of his fathers. He tells Jacob that he's going to be with him. And so Jacob has made up his mind that that's what he's going to do. So the next few verses 4 through 13, Jacob makes the case to his wives about what he wants to do, that he wants to leave the service of Laban and go back to the land of Canaan. And we get a little more detail about how Laban has treated Jacob. Verse 7 talks about that Laban has essentially cheated Jacob. He's changed his wages 10 times. We read about in chapter 30 about Jacob tells him what he wants for his wages concerning the livestock that is speckled or black-colored or striped. But in addition to that, there were 9 other times at least that Laban changed Jacob's wages. We know certainly. What did Jacob originally work for when he came to work for Laban? It was for Rachel. Did he get what he worked for? Eventually. But that was another time when Laban changed his wages. In verse 8, it says that whatever Laban said his wages would be are the way the livestock flourished. So some commentaries point out, and this may be the case, that it may have been that at one point Laban said, here, you take the speckled. And then so Jacob says, all right, the speckled will be my payment for my work. And then that livestock flourishes. We know in chapter 30 that Laban at one point takes them away so that he won't have any cattle, livestock to breed. And then Jacob says, and then if I took the other type of livestock to be my payment, then that's what flourished. So no matter what he had, whatever his hand touched, God blessed him and allowed him to gain wealth. So as he's making his case to Leah and Rachel, He shares with them a dream that he has in verse 10. He says that an angel of God says that God has seen what Laban had done to him and caused the imperfect livestock to breed that we read about in chapter 30. And then the last part of this conversation on Jacob's part in verse 13 is he informs Rachel and Leah that God has commanded him to return to the land of his kindred. And he reminds Jacob of his vow that he takes back in Genesis chapter 28, verse 20, when he lays his head down on the stone and he has the dream. What was Jacob's vow? What does he say he's willing to do if God is going to look after him as he's promised? Yep. Essentially, that's it. He says, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way that I go and will give me bread to eat and clothing to wear so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God. So he's reminded of that vow. Of course, Jacob has a part to play as well. He has to be willing to obey God for God to do what he has promised. Okay, and we're just about to pick up on some new material. But like I said, I just wanted to refresh the context here. So Jacob states his case to Leah and Rachel. And an interesting thing we see when Leah and Rachel respond is that despite their competitive nature that they had just a chapter or two before, where they're competing on who's going to have the most kids or who's going to have the first son, and who is currently able to have children and who's barren. In this case, when Jacob presents them with his decision that he wants to go back to the land of Canaan, they are in unity. In verse 15, Rachel and Leah, they say that they feel like they were sold by their father and that he devoured their money from the exchange. Why would they feel like they were sold by their father? Well, in a way, so specifically how? Did Laban just give his daughters to Jacob to marry? Yeah, he had to work. Any changing hand, work that Jacob did, he didn't just give their hand in marriage like you would expect, like we read about with Rebecca, and that we read about with Sarai and Abram. There was something else. There was a financial element to this. And to add insult to injury, they say that he's devoured the money from the exchange that takes place. Does someone have a hand up over here for comment? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, looking at chapter 31, verse 15, in addition to being sold, verse 15 and 16, it says that Well, verse 16, all the wealth that God has taken away from our father belongs to us and to our children. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do. So, to your point, Laban has lost some measure of wealth, however this happened, whether it's from some natural occurrence and the livestock got sick, or if it's from recklessness and irresponsibility, his wealth has dwindled as Jacob has prospered. So, after Jacob has this discussion, and they say in verse 16, Leah and Rachel, now then whatever God has said to you, do. In verse 17, Jacob puts his wives and his sons on camels to leave. Okay, next section of verses 18 through 21. So we just read that Jacob and his household, they're on their camels and they're leaving. So in addition to Jacob's wives and his children, he takes all of his livestock and all of the property that he has gained, and he's going to head toward Canaan. Now the time that he picks to leave is a very opportune time, because Laban is out shearing the sheep. So to shear the sheep don't all just come into one place near the homestead and you just shear them. Laban has to go out and find the sheep where they're at, because they're going to be grazing about, and he'll go to each group of the flock and they'll shear them. So it's going to take some time. So Jacob, he gets a head start, and, well, I'm getting ahead of myself here. In verse 19, a very interesting point, that Rachel takes her father's idols with her. Among the rest of the possessions that belong to Jacob, Rachel makes sure to take Laban's idols. And some versions say images, and the Hebrew word there is used in other portions of the Old Testament to refer to like an image, kind of like a statuette with a humanoid form. If you think in 1 Samuel, David, he leaves, essentially would be the palace, because it's where his wife, Michal, the son of Saul, is at. He leaves their bedroom, and Michal puts an image in the bed and covers it with hair. And Saul thinks, his men think that David's still there, so they go in because they think he's there and they're going to kill him. But anyways, that's the word that's used there for image, is something that has a head. So this is probably like a little statuette idol is what we're talking about here, to represent some type of deity. What deity that is, we don't know, but we certainly know from reading throughout the Old Testament that the people of Canaan and the Near East were idolatrous peoples, and they had many gods. And as we'll see in a bit, Laban knows who Jehovah God is, and he worships him, or has some measure of respect for Jehovah God, but also worships these other false gods as well. Yeah, that certainly could be part of it. And another thing I've always wondered is maybe she's just being malicious, and she knew it was something her father valued, and apparently there's some bad blood with the way that they've been treated, so she's going to take something of value from her father's. But it could be any number of those things, or a combination would certainly be, that would make sense. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
the head out, cross over at the Euphrates River, head toward Gilead.
See how this turned out.
Yeah, it didn't turn out too good. So this is where Jacob started. This is where Laban resides in Haran and Padan Aram. And so this is the way that Jacob's going to be traveling. And here is Gilead. So that's where he's headed. So he's got a long way to go. And he traveled a long way from Lebanon.
And it, yeah,
it's over. Made note of that. It was over 300 miles. This is the huge travel. But you could travel
from
Amram to Gilead. So the next group of verses, chapter
31, verses 22 through 30,
Laban joins steering.
And so Jacob had
2 day head start.
That's when Laban learns that Jacob has left on the third day after their departure.
So Laban gathers up
with his kinsmen, so a group of people, and he goes after Jacob.
It takes 7 days
to catch up.
Imagine Jacob with all his livestock,
his
children,
and
his wives. chapter 31,
verse 26 to the beginning. So again, Laban is talking to Jacob.
He's confronting
him now.
And Laban said to Jacob,
"What have you done that you have tricked me and driven
by my daughter? Right.
Laban and his men, they, verse 33, father, that she can't rise before him because the way of women is upon her. So it gives her an excuse not to have to get up. And so, therefore, Laban is not able to look at the saddle that she's sitting on. Probably he can't see it if she's laying like in this picture. She's got a blanket on her or something. She obviously doesn't feel well. And Laban's probably just going to leave her alone. So he doesn't find the idols. So Laban has gone through all this trouble. He's gone through Jacob's camp, searched over everything that he's got, looking for these idols. And Jacob says, anything, not just the gods, but anything that I've taken that's yours, take it back. But he doesn't find anything. So verse 36, Jacob is going to fire back here. And Jacob became angry and berated Laban. Jacob said to Laban, "What is my offense? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me?" So Jacob says, "I haven't done anything wrong." And he left, and Laban wasn't happy with that. But Jacob said, "I haven't done anything to wrong you." Verse 37, "For you have felt through all my goods, what have you found of all your household goods? Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two." But he didn't find anything. There's nothing to set before the kinsmen to let them decide. Verse 38, "These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. What was torn by a wild beast, I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. For my hands you required it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night." So Jacob's saying here in verse 39, any of the losses of the flock, Jacob took those out of his own flock. And so if it was one of Laban's animals, Jacob replaced it with one of his, because he didn't want to be accused of mismanaging Laban's livestock. Verse 40, "There I was, by day the heat consumed me, and the cold by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac, had not been on my side, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God saw my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night." So he's talking about God coming to him in the dream. Was a rebuking of Laban. So Jacob has said, he's basically laid it all out. He's left Laban. There's nothing to hold back now at this point. He's not working for Laban anymore. He talks about the hardships of what he's endured and how he's had to take losses on his livestock so that Laban didn't have to. An interesting thing in verse 43, Laban responds and said to Jacob, "The daughters are my daughters. The children are my children, the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day for these my daughters or for their children whom they have born?" So Laban doesn't refute anything that Jacob just said. Jacob basically says, you're a cheat, you're dishonest. Laban doesn't deny it. Verse 44 through 45, Jacob and Laban are going to come to an agreement. And verse 44, Laban says, "Come now, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." So verses 45 and 46, Jacob, he finds a stone and he sets it up as a pillar, and he has his kinsmen to gather up stones, and they put them into a heap. And in verse 47, Laban calls this monument Jagar Sahadath. I practiced that last night, but apparently I've forgotten it. But Jacob called it Galeed. Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me today." Therefore, he named it Galeed and Mizpah. For he said, "The Lord watch between you and me when we are out of one another's sight." So the Jagar Sahadutha means heap of testimony in the Chaldean language. And then what Jacob calls it, Galeed, essentially means the same thing, a heap of testimony in the Aramaic language. And then the second name, Mizpah, means an outlook point. So verse 48, Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me today." And therefore he named it Galeed and Mizpah. So that's the outlook point is the part of this heap is going to be watching them. And then continuing verse 49, "The Lord watch between you and me when we are out of one another's sight. If you oppress my daughters, or if you take wives besides my daughters, although no one is with us, see, God is witness between you and me." So this is the first part of the covenant, is how Jacob's supposed to treat his wives. He cannot oppress. He's not to oppress his wives. And he's not supposed to take any other wives in addition to his daughters. So that's part number one. And the second part of the covenant, verse 52, it says, "This heap is a witness and the pillar is a witness that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you will not pass over this heap and this pillar to me to do harm." So they were not to go across this monument toward each other's land with the intent to do harm. In verse 53, Laban says, "The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. So Laban's saying here in verse 53 that who would be the judge of this covenant? It says it's going to be Jehovah God. So at this point, you know, put the idols and the little g gods aside. So we understand here that Laban knows who Jehovah God is. And obviously it's important enough for them, for this covenant, that's who's going to be the judge of this covenant. It's not going to be one of his idols. It's going to be Jehovah God. And so Jacob agrees to it. And in verse 54, Jacob offers a sacrifice. And then the two parties, Laban and his men, Jacob, and all the people with him, they share a meal together. They spend the night, and then the next morning, Laban's going to arise, and he says his goodbyes to his grandchildren, to his two daughters. He blesses them, and then he returns back to where he came from. So the conclusions of chapter 31. So far has God been true to the promise he made to Jacob in Genesis chapter 28. What's he done so far for Jacob that's fulfilling this promise? Yep. Yes, he's certainly been taken care of. What about his descendants? So he's got 11 sons at this point. So he's well on the way. The nation of Israel is already starting here. All right. Has Jacob kept his vow so far? What did Jacob say he would do? If you do this, this, and this, then you will be my God. Is he obeying what God has told him to do so far? Yeah. He's going back to the land of Canaan, even though he knows what's waiting for them there. He knows Esau is going to be there. But he's doing what God has commanded to do. All right, so then we're going to get into chapter 32 and cover part of this. So chapter 32 is Jacob is preparing to meet Esau. So, chapter 32, verse 1, Jacob, he's on going on his way, and it says, verse 1, and the angels of God met him. So he sees that there's angels traveling amongst his camp. And he says in verse 2 that this is God's camp. And so he calls the name of that place Mahanaim, which means two camps. So there's his camp, and then there's the angels that are among them. So, verse 3, Jacob's going to be proactive here. He remembers how he left things with Esau not very well 20 years ago. And he sends messengers to Esau. And in verse 4, Jacob tells him, this is what you're supposed to say. Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord in order that I may find favor in your sight. So Jacob refers to himself as Esau's servant. Why is that? Jacob's got all this wealth. He's the one that received the blessing. Esau was going to serve him. That was part of the blessing. So why does he say that he's his servant? Sure. So that's a big part of it too. This is not the same Jacob that was deceitful and thought only of himself. He's had a change of heart. Think of how he dealt with Laban. He endured all the hardship of Laban. He endured being cheated by Laban. He never was retaliatory against Laban. He was a man of peace, and he trusted in God to take care of him. So I think both are true. He's being conciliatory, and I think also, like Jonathan said, this is a changed man. He's not the arrogant younger man that he was when he left. Before Jacob left, what did Esau say he was going to do to Jacob? He's going to kill him. So remember that. So that's another motivation for Jacob as well. And then he tells Esau, he's having the servants explain to Esau of all the wealth that he has accumulated. Why would Jacob want to tell Esau everything that he has? Sure. Yep, so he was supposed to have the birthright, he was supposed to have the blessing, but he left. So Esau has, this has been Esau's, and the blessing and what's supposed to be the firstborns is supposed to be a double portion of the inheritance. That's exactly right. So he's saying that Jacob's saying, I've got everything, I'm not coming to take what's yours. In addition to that, he's saying that he's his servant. So the messengers have gone to Esau, and they come back, and they've got a message from Jacob. And they say, as a matter of fact, Esau is going to come to you, so you don't have to come all the way down here. And in fact, Esau is going to come with 400 men. So rightfully, in verse 7, Jacob is afraid, and he is distressed. The last thing he had heard from Esau prior to leaving was that Esau wanted to kill him, and that's why he left. So Jacob immediately goes into survival mode. He takes his livestock and his family, his servants, and divides them into two companies. And his plan is, it says in verse 8, so that if one company is attacked by Esau's group, then the other can have a chance to escape. So in verses 9 through 12, this is kind of another part of Jacob's transformation. So he gets this, what is essentially scary, bad news, that Esau's coming with these 400 men. And he does what he can do, as we should do whenever we get bad news. We should do what we can to try to mitigate the negative situation. But also, he does, and sets a good example here, that he turns to God. he prays. And we're going to read his prayer starting in verse 9. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham, and God of my father Isaac, O Lord, who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of all these deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers, with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So that's the end of the prayer. So so again, it's almost Jacob is almost completing this 180, almost. He's humble in this prayer. He says in his prayer that he is unworthy of the love and faithfulness that God has shown him. Essentially saying, I'm unworthy of the blessings, but God is taking care of him anyway. And it shows that Jacob is a man of faith. Yes. And look at this last point. So after his prayer, he's going to send Esau some gifts, starting in verse 13. These are all the gifts that he sends. So all the animals that he's sending. And if you add all those up, it's over 550 animals, because it says the milking camels and their calves. And so he's not giving everything away. He's giving a portion away as a gift. So imagine how wealthy Jacob has become. But yet this is a very significant gift that he's giving. And in verse 16, among each group of these animals, the servants were to send. There was supposed to be a pause in between each group of animals so that Esau would just get this wave after wave of gifts. And we will stop right there. We'll pick up right there on Sunday. So thank you all for your comments this evening. And thank you, Grant, for some notes on chapter 31. Oh, it's in there. There it is.